It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Great to be here on the big show for Dory Monson, my favorite radio hosts here. All right. So we've got a lot of things happening, a lot of weird things happening, and weird things happening in places that weird things should not happen. Among them is in the midst of this Supreme Court, this nomination, the hearing, the confirmation hearings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett. The senator from Hawaii, Mazi Hirano, was first calling out the Judge Barrett for her quote-unquote offensive use of the term sexual preference, because in reference to LGBTQ communities, she had used sexual preference, which the senator from Hawaii now says this is an outrage, despite the fact that absolutely everybody uses it, including everybody that's on the Democrat side of the fence, which we played earlier. She also asked her an embarrassing question. Now, this is the kind of question that, frankly, Democrat nominees to the Supreme Court do not get. Republican nominees to the Supreme Court get this kind of thing. And it just ends up being total nonsense. Listen to this ridiculous question.
Since you became a legal adult, have you ever made unwanted requests for sexual favors or committed any verbal or physical harassment or assault of a sexual nature?
No, Senator Hirono.
Have you ever faced discipline or entered into a settlement related to this kind of conduct?
No, Senator.
Well, I mean, you got to hand it to her. At least she's an equal opportunity question asker. I mean, because generally, this is the thing. There's statistically speaking, the U.S. population is just a little over majority women. But let's face it, men are predominantly the ones in jail, and we're also the ones that are charged with sexual harassment and other issues. So she's just, you know, she's just going to ask that of everybody. I'm sure she'd ask it of Ruth Bader Ginsburg herself if she were reincarnated and there was a young woman ready to be reinstated to the Supreme Court. It's just such a ridiculous and offensive thing. You know, I mean, are you going to ask other questions as well? Have you ever committed an assault of a child? You know, where does this kind of nonsense end? And at what point is that? How is that not a total and complete embarrassment? Again, you see it on conservative sites all over the place. But is it going to be called out as an embarrassment to Democrats on a national scale? Are they going to have to answer to that? Like, you know, you get a nut job that's running as a Republican somewhere and you hear about it. You don't necessarily hear the same thing. These supposedly isolated incidents don't generally get used against everybody nationwide if it's on the other side of the fence. So she's called out Amy Coney Barrett for her offensive use of the term sexual preference. And she's now established that she has not sexually assaulted anyone, as though somehow everybody looking at Judge Barrett, mother of seven, adoptive mother of two, mother of a child with special needs, professional and acclaimed jurist acclaimed by liberal and conservative colleagues alike for a brilliant mind. She's busy sexually harassing people. So, question answered. Thanks for that insight. I can't believe we pay your salary here. All right. Coming up next year on the Fastest 15, we've got a woman in Alaska that has created quite a situation for herself. But before we get to her, it's Nancy Pelosi jumping on board. She's been withholding the stimulus package despite a $1.8 trillion proposal from President Trump. Pelosi wants it bigger. She wants more. She says, go big or go home. She had a big argument with CNN's Wolf Blitzer on the air. Wolf was pushing back on that stimulus and wants to know, you know, hey, what's going on? Why aren't you? She's expecting to go on CNN and just be able to say, you know, it's not enough. I don't like it. Wolf decides to push back.
And even members of your own
caucus. I understand that. But
even members of your own caucus. even members of your own caucus, Madam Speaker, want to accept this deal, $1.8 trillion. Congressman Ro Khanna, let me just quote Ro Khanna, a man you know well. I assume you admire him. He's a Democrat. And he just said this. He said, people in need can't wait until February. $1.8 trillion is significant and more than twice the Obama stimulus. Make a deal. Put the ball in McConnell court. So what do you say to Ro Khanna?
What I say to you is, I don't know why you're always an apologist, and many of your colleagues, apologists for the Republican position. Ro Khanna, that's nice. That isn't what we're going to do, and nobody's waiting till February. I want this very much now.
All right, so that's called, that exposes a dramatic strategy, which is, it doesn't matter who you're talking to, you stick with your talking points. Because no other person on earth would say that CNN is accused of towing the Republican line and defending the Republican line. Not Wolf Blitzer, certainly. Not Acosta, not others on CNN. So Pelosi's idea is she gets challenged, well, you're a Republican toady. You might miss out on your next cocktail party. And she got mad.
Do you have any idea of how
that's precisely why, Madam Speaker, it's so important right now. Yesterday, I spoke to Andrew Yang, who says the same thing. It's not everything you want,
but
there's a lot there.
Honest to God, you really, I can't get over it, because Andrew Yang, he's lovely. Ro Khanna, he's lovely. They are not negotiating this situation. They have no idea of the particulars. They have no idea of what the language is.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because I thought we had to pass something to find out what was in it instead. But now she's like, hey, you know what? These guys are just lovely people, but you don't ask us questions. If she's negotiating the deal, say so. Say, what is it exactly? Tell everybody what it is. You're holding it up. You know, other people are pointing out, yeah, there might be some particulars you care about and your political colleagues you care about for political reasons. But as they point out, at a certain point, with people forced out of work, we're going to need, and businesses closing left and right, we're going to need something extra. So Blitzer then asks, hey, wait a second. Why don't you talk to the guy who, you know, wrote the art of the deal?
Serious questions, because so many people are in desperate need right now. Let me ask you this.
Okay.
When was the last time? When was the last time you spoke with the president about this?
I don't speak to the president.
Why not call him and say, Mr. President, let's work out a deal. It's not going to be everything you want, not going to be everything I want, but there are so many Americans right now who are in desperate need. Let's make a deal.
What makes me amused, if it weren't so sad, is how you all think that you know more about the suffering of the American people than those of us who are elected by them to represent them at that table.
Yeah, just the other day, you know, I made an appointment at my hairstylist, and you know, sure, they've been closed down everywhere else, and I've been mandating that closure and fully supportive of that, but I made a special appointment and was able to go in mask-free, open it up for a while and get my hair done. And we were just talking about how miserable it must be for everybody else to not be able to get their hair done. Blitzer, have you ever done that? Loser. All right. Then Pelosi tells Wolf he doesn't know what he's talking about.
We're going to get a deal. And when we do, it will be retroactive.
Here's what you wrote in a letter to House Democrats, Madam Speaker. And I ask these questions only, as you know, so many millions of Americans are suffering
right
now. Well,
you quote two people who know nothing about the agreement. There is no agreement. But what the suggestions are, as if there's some authority on the subject. Please, give equal weight to all of the chairmen on the committee who have written this bill.
But so many of your fellow Democrats in the House, they want a deal right now. The problem solvers, they all want a deal right now.
Yeah.
And here's what they're complaining about, because you wrote a letter to House Democrats and you said this. Let me read a line from the letter you wrote. The president only wants his name on a check to go out before Election Day and for the market to go up. Is that what this is all about? Not allow the president to take credit if there's a deal that will help millions of Americans right now?
He's not that important. But let me say this. With all due respect, and you know we've known each other a long time, you really don't know what you're talking about.
By the way, Wolf hit the nail on the head there, I think, because she kind of – there's this something about the way she speaks. I know some of you will see it differently, but I look at it and I hear that. When he says, is it really about not letting him put his name on the check? I you can see it. And she's like, you got me. That's exactly what it's about. I don't want anything to take away of Biden victory. There's no way we're going to let this stimulus package go through ahead of time. We need to maximize misery until after the election. So this is not going to happen. I'm going to hold it back. These guys don't understand the politics involved. We gotta hold this back, not let Trump get a win. I think that's dead on. And then she ends the conversation.
And it's not about me. It's about millions of Americans who can't put food on the table, who can't pay the rent.
And we represent them. And we represent them. And we represent
these long food lines.
And we represent them.
I know you are.
We know them.
I'm just saying.
We represent them and we know them.
As we say.
We know them. We represent them.
Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, as they say.
It is nowhere near perfect.
Madam Speaker.
Always the case, but we're not even close to the good.
All right. Let's see what happens, because every day is critically, critically important.
It gets tougher to say that we're nowhere near the good when your own colleagues are, you know, out in the media and posting things saying, yeah, we need this deal. Let's get this deal going. Let's get it going. That's, by the way, that's the first time I can remember ever seeing Nancy Pelosi on the fence pushed to the corner from a media personality. Since she became speaker, or even her previous incarnation as speaker, it's been a long time. All right. This brings us to our next in the Fastest 15. In Alaska, there is a big breaking political story regarding a mayor. Mayor Ethan Berkowitz, 58 years old, had to admit this week to having an inappropriate, what the Daily Mail is calling a messaging relationship. But it looks like it was a little more than that. You know, there's some body language, I guess, here. Relationship with a television reporter, Maria Athens, a 41-year-old, currently 41-year-old television reporter in Anchorage. Now, we don't know how long the relationship was or whatever, but why is the mayor admitting it? Well, she posted a video on Facebook accusing him of posting nude photos of himself to a website featuring underage girls, and then shared a nude photo on Facebook that she claimed was the mayor. The mayor said it was scandalous, slanderous, and described her as hostile and unwell. Police investigated, found no evidence of criminal conduct on Berkowitz's part. They did not see anything that substantiated these claims. And the thing is, she works for the Fox ABC CW channel news in Anchorage. I never even knew that relationship existed. Can you imagine how confused protesters must be if a reporter shows up and they're Fox and ABC? Do you throw them out? Do you keep them there? What do you do? Anyway, so she posts this thing claiming that she's going to break the story on the newscast. The television station is beside themselves trying to figure out a way to distance themselves from their own reporter now, because that story did not air. They don't want to break it. They don't want anything to do with it. But they're also not saying that she's fired, right? They're not confirming anything there, even though in addition to this post about the mayor, she also allegedly assaulted the station manager in a car. Because according to the report here, she's having a relationship with the station manager, Scott Centers. And so police ended up having to arrest the news anchor. She then allegedly assaulted the police officer and kicked the side of the police door. Always a bad idea. I mean, you think somebody was covering this stuff would know. So when the mayor says hostile and unwell, This is what he means. She left a voicemail on the mayor's voicemail box. We had to bleep some stuff, quite a bit actually, and it does not make this lady seem like she is a good person. Although she is not yet convinced of that. Listen,
Ethan, it's Maria Athens from Fox ABC CW Newsnet National Alaska. I just learned through my Emmy award-winning journalism, you're also a pedophile and like little girls and children. And there's a website. I'm so exposing you. I'm going to get an Emmy. So you either turn yourself in, kill yourself, or do what you need to do. I will personally kill you and Mara Kimmel, my self, you Jewish piece of living. You have met your match. You have met your match. I can't believe I am such a good person and thought I loved you. I hate. I don't even hate you. I will pray for your Zionist ass, you piece of loser. And I'm putting this on the news tonight. Bye. Have a great Friday, you.
Yeah, so that's what you call a meltdown all the way. When she says I'm a super good person there, I'm a really good person. I'm just spewing anti-Semitic hatred toward you, describing him as a Zionist and I can't even repeat it here, but she uses his Jewish identity there as a portion of her insult, and it's all designed to just describe him as this hateful human being. And then she thinks she's the good person. I feel like somebody needs an intervention here to walk her through what a good person is. You know, just say, hey, look, you know, let's walk through what good people do. You've got a guy here who's a father of two kids, the mayor. You had this relationship with him earlier. You know, mistakes happen. Good people do bad things. But now you're posting nude things online. You're making accusations that the police say aren't there. And now you're making threats and you're splashing in some anti-Semitism in there and you're making death threats. So that's not Emmy award-winning journalism, by the way. That's job-killing lunacy. Anyway, no word yet from the station whether or not she's fired, you know. So I guess it takes a lot up there in Alaska to get yourself fired. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. In for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Really fortuitous spot on the hour news there regarding the state's unemployment security department, because that's exactly the topic of this segment. We have this situation in Washington where we've managed to provide Nigerian scammers and others with about, what, $650 million or so dollars. Sure, we got some of the money back thanks to the federal government, but we're extremely vulnerable. There have been people that have been waiting a very long time for benefits that, I mean, look, this is one of these situations, too, where they were forced into unemployment. You know, it's not like they, you know, it was a normal cyclical situation. Government came in and said, you cannot work. And so suddenly, you know, with an economy going, you know, by like gangbusters, came to a screeching halt. And they're wondering how they're going to pay their bills. And suddenly they find themselves waiting while Nigerian scammers and other scammers around the world get money quickly. How did that happen? Is it fixed? You know, right now we just heard at the bottom of the hour, they're laser focused on making sure that people get their checks and get them on time. Maybe they're doing it. But are they doing things correctly yet at Washington's Employment Security Department? Mark Harmsworth is the director for the Small Business Center at Washington Policy Center and a colleague of mine. Mark, great to have you on the program on the Dory Monson Show.
Thanks for having me on, David. Appreciate it.
You bet. You've got a new study out. Washington's state-run unemployment trust fund needs fraud protection and better management. And, you know, it struck me that we just went through this extremely expensive national headline-producing fraud occurrence. And yet, from what I gather with your study, we haven't made the fixes necessary to prevent future fraud. Is that accurate?
Yeah, they've made some progress. They added some additional authentication. But really the problem is just the amount of load that we've got. You can imagine in the future if we were to have another catastrophic event, say an earthquake, which nobody wants, but you know we live in an earthquake zone, so that could happen. You would also see a large spike in unemployment claims as we kind of went through that process. Their systems are just not set up for that. And the reason is because you apply for your unemployment benefits at the point when you're laid off, rather than going through like a pre-authorization or pre setup of your account ahead of time so that when the event, or if the event was to unfortunately happen and you're laid off, you could then go in, log in securely, you know who you're authenticated to this account, and then you can go through and process the claims. It makes things a lot easier. They haven't fixed that problem yet, and that's really one of the issues that we're talking about in the study, is how to fix that.
Is that something that's typically done in other states?
Some states look at some pre-authorization, but we're, you know, we'd be blazing the trail a little bit here. The system itself, you think about if you go to your bank when you set up, you don't open the account when you want to make a withdrawal. You open the account when you start putting money into your bank account, and you set up the, and we call it two-factor authentication, where you have the number that comes through on your phone and the PIN number and so forth. So that's the kind of thing that we could be setting up to help them. And it would have prevented the majority, if not all, of some of the fraud that we've seen, because then there would have been opportunity for those accounts to be re-verified when things weren't so panicked as people were trying to get their unemployment insurance.
That's an excellent analogy, by the way, with the banking situation. What do we need to do at this point to improve? I mean, they say they're laser focused on making sure that people get their benefits. Are they getting speedier at that? Is it a safe process now where they're properly verifying people?
So in order to reduce the backlog quickly, ESD, the Employment Security Department, has relaxed some of its adjudication policy. It sent a memo out internally telling a lot of the adjudicators that when people were applying for benefits, they didn't need to go through and check a certain number of criteria. There were 12 criteria that they were using to go through and make sure that you aren't making a fraudulent claim. For example, if your employer was to leave the state, you would lose your job. That's a valid reason for a claim, but they're not checking that anymore. So, you know, there's some room there for some fraud. And so that enabled them to reduce the numbers somewhat artificially quickly. We obviously want everyone to get their unemployment benefits as fast as we can. But there are, because of that, we know that there's going to be some additional fraud that's going to be occurring. And you're seeing that in the depletion of the insurance trust fund, which as of yesterday, numbers are in the 1.8 to 2.2 million, according to ESD. And they're expecting to see that drop down to 1.2 million by the end of the year, which is going to cause a catastrophic increase of 700% in the unemployment tax rates for our businesses in this state.
Yeah, you hit on my next question, which is, repeat that if you would, just so people get the real dramatic sense of what we're looking at here in terms. I feel like we're in when it comes to the unemployment trust fund, it reminds me of one of those disaster movies where somebody's standing on a mountain and they're seeing the wave or the wall of fire headed their direction, and there's nowhere they can go to stop it. When you describe a 700% tax increase, or I should say, do they call it a fee or a tax? It doesn't matter. It still ends up being a tax, money taken from you as an employer. And then if the employer is out of that money, that means, you know, if they're on a shoestring and they're, you know, and their profit margin's real small, that could end up sinking even more employers and causing more problems. Am I wrong?
You're absolutely right. And ESD, what they're trying to do is avoid what's called a solvency trigger. The solvency trigger is when the value of the fund drops down to a point where they don't have 7 months worth of unemployment benefits available anymore. So they then have to take out a federal loan, which is you have to repay that just like you would do any other loan, or they do a sort of a line of credit. Again, you still have to repay it. So there's not significantly any difference there. They're trying to avoid that. And the way you do that is by either spending less money out of the account, which is let people go back to work safely and stop removing money from the account and start paying money in, or you have to increase your tax rates, which is what they've opted to do. And because we're at the end of 2020 now, we've only got a couple, 3 months left, they've got to do it dramatically because this is on January the 1st. They have to start this process. And 700% is the number that they quoted. Originally, they thought it was going to be 300%. Now it's 700. So if you're paying $50 or $100 a month for an employee for unemployment benefits. That's going to jump up to $700. And many small businesses will not be able to do that, and they're not going to rehire people because of that, which just compounds the problem.
I was about to say, it sounds like we could, you know, we could find ourselves in an unsustainable and destructive, repetitive cycle. And so then the question is, how do you break out of that, or do you just wait for it to grind to a halt because it hits some kind of barrier?
Well, there's no quick fix right now, but long term, what we should be looking at is, I believe, and this is something the Policy Center has been advocating for a while to avoid these type of situations, is personal unemployment accounts where you not only just pay into the account like you have been doing, but you could then choose whether to withdraw money from the account or not if you're in an unemployment event. And then there's some potential there for when you retire to be able to get some of that money out and get some return on it. You still need a state sort of a group fund, if you like, to cover those days when the money just runs out. But if you do it this way, it sort of shifts the responsibility to the individual to sort of manage their unemployment, which I think will certainly help in the long term.
What's the resistance to that? I mean, when I hear it, I think it sounds like a great idea. If you didn't use it over a long period of time, you could, you know, move it to a retirement account or move it to a medical savings kind of account where, you know, as you get older, you're going to need that's where your medical costs go way up anyway. So it sounds like a win-win. I can hear people saying, well, yeah, but we need all those people that are not unemployed to pay for everybody else. So, you know, that's a crazy idea, Mark. But ultimately, what do you see as the resistance to that?
Well, there's a huge bureaucracy that's been built around the unemployment scheme, obviously not functioning particularly well right now. And, you know, there's a lot of people that in state government, it grew because of this. It's just another state program. But the real question is, why shouldn't this be, you know, who's going to resist this? The real question should be, why not? Why can't we do this? And give me a good reason why. And I don't think you can. I think this is a great idea.
When you talked about repayment of federally secured loans, you know, and those federal loans, the repayment's going to be stuck to employers that didn't cause the depletion of the fund, or maybe, you know, I guess it depends how you're phrasing it, but since they're forced to or ordered to make people unemployed, it's certainly not their fault that people are unemployed. Not that I think it's their fault in general anyway, but you know, what does that actually look like? I mean, and when you say that, hey, we got to pay back this loan, I mean, even President Trump was talking about having some student loan forgiveness in the latest stimulus package. A lot of Democrats are saying we got to forgive various loans. Isn't it possible we're just kind of banking on this idea that the feds will just say, you know what, forget about it. We're throwing trillions of dollars everywhere else. We'll throw it toward unemployment funds as well.
Yeah, I think there are certain members of the leadership team inside ESD who are pretty much expecting that to happen. But if you put your federal hat on for a second, is it fair that the other states pay for our $300 million that we lost to Nigerian fraudsters because of insufficient security protocols on our system? And it's a little bit like the increases that they're proposing for next year on employers. There's a small component, which everyone pays. That's the sort of the group fund. That's the solvency fee and the it's called the social fee. But then the rest of the unemployment tax rates are based on the number of people that you lay off. So if you're a good employer and you've not laid a bunch of people off over the years, your rates are nice and low. If you're a terrible employer and you're letting people go all day long, then your rates are high. But because of the mandated shutdown and the forced layoffs, everyone gets thrown into the you're a bad employer bucket. So everyone's going to see rates go up, whether they were good employers or not. And then how do you qualify? Should we, you know, should the federal government come in and pay for something that was mandated on our businesses when we could be opening safely much more aggressively, I think?
You know, it's interesting. I know your study's focused on, you know, trying to find ways to improve the unemployment security department and the fund and the approach. But the takeaway for me with, you know, the potential for the 700% tax increase, it's just there's been so much misery And it's not just a business failing. It's a retirement dream. It's a family being able to spend time together. It's college funds. It's inheritance. It's a legacy. It's all these hours and overtime away from family, trying to build something up. It's the number of other people who are employed and are dependent on those operations with their families. You know, and I think about how so many of them are in a tenuous position right now. You know, and to have this stream of misery continue and the after effect of misery continue, it's heartbreaking. You can read Mark's study at WashingtonPolicy.org. Washington State's state-run unemployment trust fund needs fraud protection and better management. And his latest blog on the 700% increase potential at WashingtonPolicy.org. Mark Harmsworth, director of the Center for Small Business, thanks so much for making the time. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe is in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. It's kind of interesting watching the presidential race. It seemed to me that Trump was kind of sleepwalking through the 2020 presidential race. He seemed semi-uninterested. You know, he was doing his usual shtick, but there just wasn't that kind of passion in his voice. And it seems like since the COVID bout, he's kind of, it's like it's jolted him and he's back in action and now he wants it. Is it too late for him? I don't know. We have this crazy situation where people are early voting. I always find that to be bizarre, but it seems like now he wants it. Whereas before I couldn't figure out if the guy wanted a second term, or is this kind of like, yeah, I'd like it if it happens, but whatever. But he seems to want it now. And he's at his latest rally. He's asking suburban women, the demographic that, shall we say, is least affectionate about the Trump presidency. Trump is saying, why don't you love me?
They said they may not like the way you talk, but I'm about law and order. I'm about having you safe. I'm about having your suburban communities. I don't want to build low-income housing next to your house, okay, if that's okay. And I ended the regulation, the rule, that made the zoning so impossible that you had to destroy your communities. And then I hear the suburban woman. I think that the suburban woman, and I used to say suburban housewife, I used to take heat, but I said, does anybody care? Do you care if I say suburban? No, they're all going, no. Again, the only one cares is them. Trump said suburban housewife, but I didn't say it because I don't. You learn very quickly. You learn very quickly. But suburban women, they should like me more than anybody here tonight because I ended the regulation that destroyed your neighborhood. I ended the regulation that brought crime to the suburbs. And you're going to...
One wonders if that changed the minds of any suburban women. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM.